on this episode of Trumpet Dynamics.
As much as the memory of the sound they made is the memory of their faces when it clicked, and then the expressions.
That's a good list to be on.
It's a great list to be on. On my way out the door, I said, well, I better take a box of trumpets just in case I have to play something. So I get to this meeting place, and it's a church in Hollywood, and I hear all these other trumpet players warming up and playing excerpts. He and his buddies joined our dance band, and we turned into a real jazz band. Introduced me and some of the other white kids to a really much higher level of music.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Newcomb, and welcome to Trumpet Dynamics, telling the story of the trumpet in the words of those who play it. And what an honor it is to bring on to the show today Mr. Stanley Friedman. I asked Stanley how I should introduce himself. Is he a trumpeter that composes, or is he a composer that plays trumpet? And he said, I am a former orchestral trumpet player, and he is now a very, very well esteemed composer. He has played in orchestras all over the world as a trumpet player, but now he composes. And so we are going to get to know Stanley and hear his story, hear what lights his fire, gets that heart beating just a little bit faster at the very thought of what he does. We're going to hear all about it in today's show. Welcome, sir. Nice to have you.
It's nice to be here. Thank you so much.
This is Stanley's first podcast ever.
It's my virgin voyage as a podcaster.
We're popping the cherry.
I wasn't going to say that, but go right ahead.
Well, we were both thinking it, so one of us had to say it. Every guest I have on the show, at least for the first time that I'm meeting them, I always ask this because I just love to hear everyone's beginning story. Tell us about very first start on the trumpet. What made you interested in it from the get-go?
Well, I started the way I think most kids start with a school band program. I was in the fifth grade, 10 years old, in Memphis, Tennessee, which is my hometown. And my best friend, Kenny, played the trumpet, and he got me interested in it. I came up through the public school band programs. Gradually, I got better. Along the way, especially towards high school, I started doing some arranging, and I was self-taught most of that time. I just tried to write things, and sometimes they turned out okay and sometimes not, but I learned from both experiences.
When did trumpet become like something serious? Because it's one thing to kind of play it and sort of enjoy it when you're 8 or 9 years old. I don't know, maybe 10 years old in the fifth grade or whatever it is. But it's quite another thing to want to do it past the very basics. What made you like want to take it seriously to the next level?
I was very fired up about it the first couple of years when I was a little kid. It was a way of expressing myself that was a little more out there, out front, because I was a very introverted kid and I mumbled and stumbled in my speech. The trumpet was a way of making a loud noise and presenting myself to the world in a sort of a clear, unambiguous way. My interest in it waned a bit, and then by the time I was in ninth grade, I suddenly found myself first chair in the band, along with a couple of my other friends on horn and other instruments. It was like, okay, well, now I've got a position of responsibility. I'd better get serious about this. So I became fired up all over again about it. I was practicing and really taking it very seriously, and I think without pause then for the rest of my life. I went to Washington University in St. Louis. I was not intending to be a music major in that university, a very fine university, but it had no, only a vestigial music department. And I discovered I missed it so much. I did some playing, but I wanted to be in more of a musical community. So I came back to Memphis, to what was then called Memphis State University, to major in music, along with some of my old friends.
What did you miss the most about music in an academic setting?
I needed to be surrounded and immersed in music making. Hmm. Doing it now and then, even at a decent level, was not satisfying to me. I really needed the total immersion experience of being a musician. So I threw myself into it. I was a performance major at Memphis State. This is in the early 70s, 1970s. But then I had saved up a lot of electives for my senior year. And I'd taken a little bit of composing, but not very seriously. My senior year at in university, college hired a new composition professor, Don Freund, who was fresh with a DMA from Eastman. And he played a piano recital the first week of classes, my senior year. I just stuck my head in the door just to see who this guy was. I was not intending to stick it out for the entire recital. I didn't go to piano recitals in those days. I was a trumpet player. I was captivated and astonished. He played mostly his own compositions plus some Bach. My jaw dropped. I'd never heard stuff like this. And so I signed up for three different courses with Don Freund for my senior year. And I became really a double major, even though the university didn't recognize him. And my composing took off, and he taught me so many new techniques and introduced me to so many new experiences. And after a few months, he asked me what I was going to do after graduating. I said, I don't know, maybe try to get a graduate assistantship in trumpet somewhere. He said, why don't you go to Eastman and major in composition, get a doctorate in composition? I said, could I do that? He said, sure, you'd be one of the best composers there. This was news to me.
At Eastman.
And I was just a hometown boy in Memphis. I didn't know any better. Nobody had ever said anything to me. Anyway, I said, well, you know, I'm kind of addicted to trumpet playing, and I don't think I could play trumpet at a school like that. And he said, oh, sure you could. He said, you'd be one of the better trumpet players there, except for a guy named Vizzuti.
Okay.
Yeah, he was right about that one.
Yeah, he's one of the greats of all time.
He was one of the greats of all time then when he was 20 years old. And he's still one of the greats. He's a good guy and a good friend.
You were quite the talented young lad. For someone of that stature to say that you'll be one of the better composers and one of the better trumpet players at one of the better schools in the country.
This was totally news to me. I got to tell you, all the time that I was growing up through high school and until I met Don Freund, I had gotten little or no feedback. I was under a vague impression that I was a pretty good musician. That was really it. I judged myself according to what was immediately around me. I had no exposure to the big wide world of music, for better or worse. Sometimes that's a good thing. Freund was the first person of any real stature to say, you know, you got some talent, you can do things. There's a recording I have of my high school, Memphis Central High School jazz band from 1969. And I'm playing lead trumpet and soloing on Doc's Holiday, which is a big Sammy Nestico written for Doc Severance. And we recorded these things. I play them for people now, and they say, that's great, that's amazing. We were a world-class group. We just didn't know it. Nobody ever told us. I could have gone to a conservatory right out of high school or a major university with a big music department, Michigan or something like that, but nobody ever told me I could, so it never occurred to me.
How is it that you could be in a musical environment and you're not aware of the talent that you have? Why were you not discovered?
Let me set the stage for you, what was going on at that time, because there were bigger things to think about than my individual abilities or disabilities as a trumpet player. This was at the height of the civil rights movement. Memphis had been a very segregated city, half black, half white. This is a good story, so bear with me. This is getting outside of myself a little bit, but it sets the stage. Central High School always had been the bastion of white middle-class society in Memphis. There was a whole parallel school system that was only African-American. The schools were ordered to integrate, and at first, they did it actually well. After resisting for many, many years, when they finally started integrating the school system, they actually did it well for a few years, and we're going to do it progressively, gradually, and get people used to it because society was extremely stratified. Among the first African-American kids who came to previously all-white Central High School were a bunch of extremely talented, brilliant young musicians, led by James Williams, who passed away about 10, 12 years ago. But he became one of the world's greatest jazz pianists, played with Art Blakey. He was with the Jazz Messengers when Wynton Marsalis was coming in. He became a professor at Berklee College of Music in Boston, and he won the Downbeat Best Jazz Pianist poll several years running. James Williams was a big deal, and unfortunately, he passed away. So look him up, and you'll hear some recordings of him. He was just absolutely the best. So he and his buddies joined our previously Ricky Ticky dance band, and we turned into a real jazz band. We had a great band director who nurtured this, but he couldn't have done it by himself. It was really James Williams that made us what we were and introduced me and some of the other white kids to a really much higher level of music making. Now, this was in jazz, and I didn't do a whole lot of jazz afterwards, although I could always play in a band. I knew the styles. It gradually evolved that I was a legit symphony trumpet player. That's okay. I learned really from James what some real music making was all about.
Okay. Let's talk about Stanley Friedman, the trumpet player. You did go to Eastman, correct?
Right. I did a master's and a DMA in composition with what I consider to be a trumpet minor, because I took lessons with Sidney Meier the whole time I was at Eastman, and I played an ensemble the whole time I was there. Effectively, I was a trumpet minor, but a composition major.
Trumpet minor, but you still played enough, and you had enough experience to do well for yourself, land a couple of gigs. Tell us about how that went.
At Eastman, I played in ensembles every semester. I played in Eastman Philharmonia Orchestra, sitting second trumpet to Chris Gecker, who's a pretty famous guy. I did a couple of gigs with Vizzuti. I played in the Musica Nova New Music Ensemble under Sidney Hodkinson's direction. That was one of the best experiences at Eastman, doing 20th century music. There was no 21st century yet. And my first real job after graduating was teaching primarily trumpet at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. My primary duty was being a trumpet teacher, but I also taught theory and orchestration and other composer-related things, not composition itself, and played in the faculty quintet. I played principal trumpet in the Winston-Salem, North Carolina Symphony, and lots of other gigs, orchestral and otherwise, in the state. I did that for 4 years. It was a very nice place to live and a very good gig. I faced a choice. I could go through the tenure battle, and I'd done all the things they said I was supposed to do to get tenure, or I could branch out into the world. I was very young. I started that job at UNC Greensboro before my 25th birthday. I was very young. I was barely older than my students. I really felt like I needed to get out into the world, because I felt I was teaching things that I had not personally experienced professionally. And I needed to get out and play those things and be a real professional musician, maybe then return to university teaching later. I decided not to submit to the tenure battle.
Do you say tenure or 10-year battle?
A tenure battle. I didn't even go through it. I resigned after 4 years. I moved to Los Angeles. There was a particular reason for that, for choosing LA. Tom Stevens came to Eastman as a guest artist. Tom Stevens was a principal trumpet of the Los Angeles Philharmonic and one of the truly great trumpet artists ever, and a specialist in contemporary music. Let me backtrack just for a second. While I was still in Memphis studying with Don Freund, one day Don asked me what contemporary trumpet music I knew, and I didn't know any. So he said, go to the music library and find some recordings. And I found this recording by this guy named Thomas Stevens. I'd never heard of him. He was still a young man then, mm-hmm. called the Contemporary Trumpet. This LP record, and I put it on, and it was another jaw-dropping experience, because I heard stuff I couldn't have imagined before. And I became a huge Tom Stevens fan, and my horizons greatly expanded for trumpet playing and trumpet music, which I carried through to Eastman and composed my one-hit tune, Solace, there while I was a graduate student.
What's the name of the piece again?
Solus, S-O-L-U-S. It's the tune I've written that most the trumpet players most know. It's an unaccompanied piece, and I wrote it just for myself, and it's gradually taken off over the years. So I moved to L.A. Tom was kind of my mentor. He mentored a number of young trumpet players. He was an extraordinary musician, extraordinary person, not always the easiest person to get along with. He was a very unique character, very unusual man, but with a heart of gold. And he took me under his wing. He helped me work into doing a few studio movie TV recordings in LA and subbing with the LA Philharmonic. Those were my best gigs while I lived in Los Angeles in the 1980s. And I freelance taught at a number of universities in the area.
You've had gigs around the world, I think Hong Kong and New Zealand. How did those come about?
So I was living in Los Angeles. This would be 1983, freelancing. And I got this strange phone call from someone whose name I didn't get saying the conductor of the Hong Kong Philharmonic is in town and would like to meet you. Well, I barely knew where Hong Kong was, and I took it literally. It would like to meet me. I said, meet me? What does that mean? On my way out the door, I said, well, I better take a box of trumpets just in case I have to play something. So I get to this meeting place, and it's a church in Hollywood, and I hear all these other trumpet players warming up and playing excerpts. So I said, uh-oh, this is an audition. And I had no idea this was an audition, but I was kind of in top form, and I waited around. They called me in, and I was outside the church. I'd been outside the church buzzing, doing my James Stamp exercises. That was another thing. Thomas Stevens had introduced me to Jimmy Stamp, who taught me how to play the trumpet correctly. So I walked in, and they said, okay, would you like to play a concerto? I said, sure, I'll play the Haydn. I had no music with me, nothing, just trumpet. So I played some of the Haydn. And they said, okay, that's nice. Let's go to the excerpts. I said, what excerpts? I said, didn't you get the list? I said, no, I didn't know there was a list. I said, do you have any music? They said, no, we're expecting you to bring your own. I said, well, just tell me what you want to hear. So they called out the tunes, and I played them from memory as best I could. And I was pretty right. They had a couple of pieces of sheet music there. And I guess I played okay, because afterwards they came out and said, congratulations, you're the new principal trumpeter of the Hong Kong Philharmonic. Can you start next week? And I said, no. I said, I got to think about this. I didn't even have a passport at the time. I'd never been outside the United States. So I talked it over with a few people, and Tom Stevens, and everybody said, go. So I went. The orchestra helped me expedite a passport. And just a couple of weeks later, I found myself getting off a plane in Hong Kong and going right into rehearsals. It was insane. I mean, the whole experience there, which I played there just one season, but it was pretty nuts. It was fun. It was traumatic. There were real highs and real lows, but I made some great friends there, discovered that, yes, I could play principal trumpet in an orchestra.
So how did the conductor of this orchestra hear of you? I mean, that's a very unusual way to land a gig. I don't think I've ever heard a story quite like that before.
It turns out he wasn't actually the conductor of the orchestra. Varujan Kojian, who's passed away since then, he was the music director of the Utah Symphony, I believe. His brother, Miran Kojian, was the concertmaster of the Hong Kong Philharmonic. And Varujan was trying to get the music directorship of Hong Kong. And he was a regular guest conductor there. What had happened right at the beginning of their season, this is in September 1983, the first trumpet player had been on holiday, and he called the orchestra and said, I'm not coming back. The orchestra manager knew that the Kojians were in America, in Los Angeles area, happened to be there at the time. And they said, find a trumpet player, quit. They knew Thomas Stevens. Tom Stevens gave them a list of people to listen to. So I was on the list. I was on Tom's list, and they offered me the gig. So I went to Hong Kong.
Well, that's a good list to be on.
It's a great list to be on. As it happened, though, had Varujan Kojian become the music director, I would have stayed in Hong Kong probably and been there to this day, who knows. But the job went to somebody else. It went to Kenneth Schermerhorn, who had a buddy who played trumpet and needed a job. So when Schermerhorn was hired, I was out.
Okay, got it. I want to know about getting the New Zealand gig, and then let's talk about transitioning from being like a full-time trumpet player to where you are now, being a composer who plays trumpet on the side.
This is also through Tom Stevens, because he had a buddy who had been principal trumpet player who wanted to get off the hot seat, and they announced the job, and Tom called me and said, you need to try out for this. I think this is the right gig for you, and it certainly was. So I did. I sent an audition tape. I was brought over a trial period, and I won the job, and I was there almost 6 years. And that was the best trumpet gig I ever had, and I have nothing but good things to say about the New Zealand Symphony and the experience of living in New Zealand. As I had said earlier, I'd been a composition major in graduate school at Eastman. It was always my plan to make a living as a trumpet player and gradually over time build my portfolio as a composer. My trumpeting career had highs and lows, and it was hardly a smooth ride, but all the time I was primarily a trumpet player. I was still composing. I occasionally got commissions, won a couple of prizes, gradually became a better composer and a more prolific composer, and built up a wider range and repertoire of music, to the point that by the time I was in New Zealand in the late 1980s, early 1990s, I wrote an opera, Hypatia, because I felt I was mature enough as a composer to tackle something really, really big. That was always the idea. And really, after I had written the opera and heard parts of it performed in New Zealand, I decided, yeah, it's going to be time very soon to let the trumpet take the back seat and to focus primarily on composing. I was seduced away from New Zealand by Zubin Mehta to come and play principal in the Israel Philharmonic, which was not a good fit for me, but also my mind was conflicted because I was thinking more about composing, but also I was starting to have some lip problems. One of the reasons I chose to leave New Zealand with deep regrets was that associate principal trumpet retired and the management didn't fill the job. And I had to do all the heavy lifting myself, and it was too much. I guess my lip always had been slightly fragile. I could play the big tunes.
Yeah.
I could get to the end of the Mahler symphonies in good form, but I needed a little break. I had to be careful.
Right.
I certainly was never one of the great virtuosos. I was a good trumpet player for a few years. I was very good for a few years. But finally, it was a big blow in New Zealand. It's a big orchestra. We played heavy repertoire with a few great conductors. At the end, after I'd already won the Israel Philharmonic job in 1992, and I was on my way there, my lip got injured. It sort of recovered, but not entirely. And it gave me problems for the next number of years.
Hmm. Do you mind sharing what type of injury?
I'm sure it was from just overuse, from playing too much, too loud, as you have to do as major symphony principal. One day in rehearsal, I got a sharp, sharp pain in my upper lip. Felt like a hypodermic needle going in there.
Wow.
And I took a couple of days off and seemed to be okay. I moved to Israel with the stress of moving to a different country and other stresses involved in Israel that were just, it was a little crazy. Great orchestra, but after tranquil New Zealand, just the constant upheaval of Israel was a little difficult to take, especially with a delicate lip. I was playing okay, but not my absolute best. After that one injury, my playing was not entirely recovered, and my tone had lost some of its color and vibrancy. Notes became a little more difficult to find. I kind of lost the feel on my lip of where each note slotted. I was playing a lot more from memory than from feel. That only goes so far. The Israel Philharmonic job did not work out. I played principal for a while with the second orchestra there, the Israel Symphony Orchestra, which was also a very, very good orchestra. And they wanted me to stay, but I said, no, I need a break. So I came back to America and immediately began freelancing in Memphis. I had just intended to visit for a few weeks, visit mom, and then go either back to Los Angeles, or I'd been offered a job in Europe. But then I met a young lady, a clarinetist in the Memphis Symphony, Rena Feller. Just celebrated our 25th anniversary. Our kids are grown and in college. And so.
Hence the website, fellerfriedman.com. Got it.
Feller Friedman. So Rena and I are happily married for all this time. She's a wonderful musician, clarinetist, Juilliard kind of person.
Well, if you all could see the video, this is an audio-only show, but Stanley's face just lit up when he mentioned his wife, so that's lovely. Maybe we can talk a little bit about your compositions. Now, it's interesting that you said that you wrote an opera a couple hundred years ago. Opera was the like what we think of going to the movies. From what I understand, maybe I'm wrong, but that was like the major entertainment of the day. You go to the opera. Now it's not so much. Now it's like a novelty. It has a very, very niche type of demographic that is interested in it.
Yeah, that's too bad because it's great stuff, isn't it? I've taught some classes where I introduced college students to opera who had never been to the opera, seen operas before, and I've gotten a few converts because it captures all of your senses. My opera, Hypatia, I was convinced it was going to take the world by storm, but I didn't know anything about the world of opera. I still think it's a good show. It hasn't been fully produced yet.
What do you mean fully produced?
Fully staged with all the trimming.
I see.
The performance in New Zealand at the International Festival of the Arts there in 92 was a concert performance of four large scenes. Now, this was with a full cast of principals, a chorus, and an orchestra. That was mostly the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra with a few other freelancers. So it was an extremely good performance, but it was not staged. So I've never actually seen it.
Okay, so basically they just played the music.
Yeah, and the singer stood there and sang, yeah.
What's it like to hear something that you've written and you visualized it, played it on the piano or whatever your process is, but you've written this and then to hear it performed by virtuoso musicians? What is that like?
Unbelievable. I'll tell you a quick story going back.
Please.
To 1978, I believe, 78, 79. This is when I still lived in North Carolina, but had that contact with Tom Stevens. He got me a commission to write a piece for brass septet, basically solo trumpet, him, Tom Stevens, solo tuba, Roger Bobo, and a brass quintet. And we met in Dallas to record it with the Dallas Symphony Principals. A stellar ensemble, to say the least. I didn't know what they expected of me. I gave them the notes, and I thought I was just going to sit back and listen. But they expected me to conduct it. Well, I'd taken conducting lessons, but I'd never conducted world-class musicians before. And so I started waving my arms, and things started happening. When they all opened up, and I heard them really play for the first time, playing my notes, I was flabbergasted. I was taken to a different realm. This is the thing about great musicians. Not only do they realize my music exactly as I intended it, it's better than I thought it could be because they put themselves into it. They do exactly what I wrote and then some, sometimes a lot. It's always better.
What piece was this that you're talking about?
Called Parody 3. It's a 7-8 minute piece, Parodie, Roman numeral, #. It was recorded there in Dallas. It's never been released. It's a terrific recording. It's just a pretty amazing piece in terms of the way they played it, all sorts of special effects and things.
How is it that you think that they connected it with it so well? They're obviously very good, but it's one thing to be great and play something with very, very good, but it's another thing to connect with it emotionally. And it sounds like your description was they just kind of connected with it.
It took a few minutes because it was a strange piece. I did there's some kind of non-traditional notation, graphic notation in it. And it took a little while for things to gel. But when it gelled, it was like, bang. Bobo, the great tuba virtuoso, Roger Bobo, he was skeptical at first. He didn't like the novel notation. And he kept saying, why did you write? Why the hell did you write it like that? But then it started working for him and he got it. And he became a good friend. Also a great mentor and teacher to me. As much as the memory of the sound they made is the memory I have of their faces when it really clicked. Like I said, it took a few minutes of rehearsing before it really clicked. And then the expressions went from skeptical and a little bit PO'd to, oh, I get it. This is okay. So that was a wonderful experience.
It's like playing Stravinsky. It takes a couple of times to appreciate it. Not that I'm comparing you to Stravinsky, it's just the same sensation. You don't get it at first.
Yeah, but when it happens, it happens. It's unmistakable.
You mentioned this Don Freund. He wrote these things and he performed them in his own recital. Have you ever performed something on trumpet that you wrote? A concerto of any kind?
Oh, lots and lots of things. I played unaccompanied piece solos on every recital I ever did for 20 years or whatever. And other pieces. I'm retired from trumpet playing now. All the lip stuff finally caught up with me. And I said, okay, enough is enough. Several years ago. But my last recitals, I played my romantic sonata, which is a big piece for trumpet and piano, 20-something plus minutes long. I intended to write the piece that trumpet players don't have, which is a major romantic, could have been written in the mid-19th century sort of European piece. Mm-hmm. Of all the pieces of mine and other people's that I've ever played, this is my favorite piece to perform.
What was the title of the piece again?
It's called Sonata in F Minor, Sonata Romantic for Trumpet and Piano. Huh. My music, by the way, is all either published by Editions BIM in Switzerland, mm-hmm. or available for distribution by Subito Music in the United States. Subito has the Romantics, the F Minor Sonata.
And would we find links to these on your website?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you go to fellerfriedman.com, it has all this stuff.
Okay. Okay, great. So the Sonata in F Minor, you wrote it in the style of a mid-19th century. So would you say that it's something that maybe a Brahms would have written for violin, but he just didn't because trumpet wasn't that prominent back then?
Yeah, that was sort of my vague role model was Brahms. Without claiming to write as well as Brahms, you would have done a better piece probably. That was sort of the image I had in mind. I also was asked a couple of years later to write another romantic piece by Tomislav Slojar in Croatia. Got a hold of that F minor sonata and liked it and wanted me to write another piece. So I wrote another romantic piece. Again, it's kind of Brahms-ish for trumpet, cello, and piano in B minor, which actually is a pretty good key. C trumpet or D trumpet, but cello's like that key. I'm scheduled to do a show at the next Trumpet Guild conference in San Antonio next May 22 of my romantic pieces. If it all comes together, we'll have performance by Kyle Millsap of my F minor sonata, Slojar playing my trumpet cello sonata, and Phil Snedecor, famous trumpeter and arranger and composer, performing my arrangements of Charlier etudes.
Arrangements of Charlier.
And various people have done accompaniment, piano accompaniments, yes, of Charlier etudes. Yes. So I had done one of everybody's favorite, number two.
It's not my favorite. I hate that one.
Phil heard my recording of it and asked me to do some more. So I arranged three more as a suite. And he did some really lovely video demos of these during pandemic days. People can find those on YouTube. And anyway, he's going to perform these.
Well, Stanley, I feel like we've just scratched the surface of your career as a trumpeter and as a composer. But sadly, we've come up on the limits of our time together. I'm just been furiously writing notes, and I will have all the notes that I've been taking on my website, jamesnewcombontrumpet.com/Friedman, FRIEDMAN. So that's jamesnewcombontrumpet.com/Friedman. We learned about James Williams. Does this Don Freund, does he have anything available online that we could listen to? Or
lots and lots. He's okay. Been professor or chair of the composition department at Indiana University.
Okay. Okay.
For many years now, and very prolific composer, great pianist. There's lots of his stuff out there. He puts new stuff out all the time.
Well, we have those two, and then, of course, Tom Stevens, James Stamp. Hopefully somebody listening to this, if they're looking for something to play in their next recital, maybe consider the Sonata in F Minor. That might be a welcome alternative to the Artunian.
Please.
All right. Well, I would love to hook up again sometime and do a round two and just dive a little deeper into some of these things. But for now, this was nice to get to know you a little bit, and I hope people listening in enjoyed it as well. And if you did, then send me a note or send Stanley a note and let us know what you thought. Send us your thoughts. But thanks so much for sharing your time and your journey and being on the show, Mr. Friedman.
Thank you, sir.
Trumpet Dynamics tells the story of the trumpet in the words of those who play it. It also tells my own story. Join me on this journey through the world of making music and making life at jamesnewcomontrumpet.com. I have blogs, videos, event calendar, and much more. And of course, if you just want to access this great podcast, just remember the URL, trumpetdynamics.com, and you're off to the races. Looking forward to the next time. Be well.